Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel of The Athletic. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. The Jays are back home. The Dome might be closed tonight. It's cold, man. It's been cold today, windy. I think you have to keep it open, though. Can't get 15 grand in there otherwise. Got to have it open tonight. It feels like it's early November, late
October.
Are
you serious right now?
I am absolutely serious.
Wow.
I spent 6 hours outside today. You can imagine what I was doing. It was cold. I had pants on, a sweater.
Wow.
Yeah,
Jonas. You're softer than I thought. I didn't think that was in you.
Do you realize it's July 30th today?
The sun is like beating down outside.
Okay, maybe it's warming up in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But it has not been warm all day. Like, I was up this morning, I was out, it was 9 o'clock, I'm outside, I'm like, it's cold out here. Like, it's cold.
Unless it's raining, they should never close the Dome.
I totally agree with that.
Ever.
I totally agree. I'm not suggesting they should. I'm saying they probably have. Like, I know in the playoffs, it's actually Major League Baseball that makes the call on that, and they always close it. I'm like, why is it closed? It's sunny and, you know, 8 degrees. We can get through that. 50,000 people in there, it's all good.
It's so bad when the Dome is closed. Like, I can't handle it. I don't
well,
like it.
Well, I can if they're in the playoffs. I can happily handle it in the playoffs. But would I prefer it being open? Absolutely. And 15,000 people will be down there tonight. And nothing but positive vibes. The Jays are making deals. They're coming off a big win last night. Man, they spanked Boston last night. They took 2 of 4, which is what we said, Jonas. At a minimum, you got to get that if you're in the race. And based on the move today, I think the front office is telling the team, we think we're in a race. We're definitely in a race. So don't let your foot off the gas. Go get it. And I love that Ross Stripling is on the mound tonight for the Jays. We haven't seen him up in Toronto as a Blue Jay. This is great.
Very exciting. We got
chicken strips on the mound tonight just to kickstart the party. The truth is, man, you can put Josh Towers out there. You can put a pitching machine out there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I ask you? So, obviously, we're going to talk about the trade.
Absolutely.
The big trade. There were multiple trades.
There's a lot of them in baseball today.
What was, like, your first reaction when you saw the trade?
That they got Berrios, and you're thinking, okay, that is exactly what they needed to do. Because it's not as much about the rest of 2021. It is about 2022, where he is under term for at least one more year. This is a team outside of Ryu, Clemens in the late 90s, A.J. Burnett. At one point, they have not had a long history of being able to lure in big arms via free agency. So I think we always knew they were either going to have to draft and develop or make a trade. This was what they did. They went out there and they got a legit stud, like a legit top 7 or 8 starter in the American League. It has been for a couple of years. He's putting up really good numbers this year. Last couple of starts got a little bit away from him, but for the most part, he has been steady. His ERA is off the charts. He's going to give you innings. He's young. He's healthy. And again, you've got him under control for next year. So the reasoning behind it made all the sense in the world. I loved it. Then I was waiting for the price.
Yes.
I was waiting for the price like everyone else. And I'm like, all right, Simeon Woods Richardson. Yeah, you're going to have to give up a good young arm to get a stud arm that's under control. And then we saw Austin Martin. And I honestly, I was taken aback. I did not see him being included in this deal.
I did not either.
I don't think many Blue Jay fans did.
I almost thought it was fake. Like, that can't be right. Like, they're reporting it wrong.
It's a massive haul for Minnesota. Like, it really is. It's a big price to pay, but that's maybe what you have to pay to get into the game. It doesn't help them throughout baseball that the Dodgers paid what they paid, which was a fortune in terms of prospect, you know, collateral. Like, that was a lot. They paid their number one and number two prospects. But they got Scherzer and Trey Turner.
Yes.
Right? Like, Scherzer, Trey Turner alone is worth a fortune, and they got both of them. So, you know, did the Jays potentially overpay? Yes, you could make that argument. Maybe we'll make that argument in 3 to 5 years, but it's always subject to change when you're moving on from prospects. You know exactly what you're getting with the arm you've brought in here.
Yeah.
Exactly what you're getting for the rest of this season, but more importantly for 2022. And I like it. I like the aggressiveness because I think if you look at this season alone, like how many starts is Berrios going to get? Like, you know, is he going to get
we're in August
10
now.
Starts? Is he going to get 12 starts maybe? You know, 12 or 13 starts? Okay, that's great. Maybe if they continue to pursue the wild card, which at this point they're 4.5 back, they got to leapfrog some teams. It's not going to be easy. I'm not sure they're going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into next season, it's 2022. That is 6 years removed from the last time they were in the playoffs. That means Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro have been putting together a plan that will be 6 years into the making.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you've got to put up or shut up. Like, at some point, you got to pay the price and go after it and get your guy. And this was the guy they wanted. This is the guy they got. Did they pay a lot? Absolutely. Like, if, I'm sure other teams were willing to pay a lot, too. Clearly, the Blue Jays made the package a little bit sweeter. They got him. But 6 years removed from the last time you're in the playoffs. That'll be the 2022 season. Like, that's a long time.
But
that's
so
a long time.
It is. Well, it sort of is. It is, I guess. But, like, so what do you think the balance is between we need to do something, but what price are we willing to pay? You know what I mean? Like, we talked a few weeks ago, and I said, like, you can't, like, waste years. Like, just you want to keep putting your chips in and trying to go for it if you can. But then, like, your number one prospect that you picked fifth overall was it last year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, last year. He's barely been here.
It's like, so that was my first reaction. It's like, really? That's who you're going to trade to get 2 years for this? Like, and then you do a little bit more research, and it's like, Martin, they're not really sure what position he is. They're not sure about the power. And it's like, okay.
And you know that that's strategic. Now that he's out the door all of a sudden, now he's got no pop. This guy, he can't find a position for him. Now he's a scrub, right? Like, of course he is. I mean, he fell into their lap last year. He had first overall talent. He drops to mm-hmm. five. It got a ton of attention because of that. And as a result, this is a guy that felt borderline untouchable because of all the hype he got when he got drafted. The Jays know who he is, what they believe he projects to be. The Twins do too. Like, the Twins should be ecstatic. Like, absolutely ecstatic. They got two stud, like, top five prospects in this organization, a Blue Jays organization that is loaded with talent below the surface. Although I read somewhere that they still have six of the top 100 prospects in baseball still in the organization. So it's not as if this completely empties the gas can in terms of kids within the organization. But it got so much hype, so much attention. People wanted to see him up here. But that's a year or two down the road.
I know, Hayes.
If
but like,
Martin makes it. You got Vladdy here right now. You got Bichette here right now. You just paid George Springer. This has been the plan.
I get it.
This has been the plan. And I understand Barrios is not a household name. He's not, you know, Verlander, Kershaw,
and he's not
Scherzer,
those guys. Like, he's
Cole.
A tier
he's,
below.
He's not. He's not a true horse stud number one Cy Young winner. What he is like a 1B. Or maybe a number two.
He's a Peter Mrazek. No, he's better than that.
He's
kidding.
Better than Peter Mrazek.
But
he's a very good arm.
But so, Hayes,
that they have under control.
Here's the quibble I have. It's like, for the Dodgers, it's different. Like, they could win the World Series this year. They're if they're not the favorite,
they just won it too. Yeah,
and they just won it. The Jays are probably not winning the World Series this year, right? Like. It's unlikely.
At this
it could
point,
happen.
It's unlikely they make
they
the
might,
playoffs right now.
Right. So this is for one run.
Yep.
And your number one prospect.
Well, it depends on where you – I think Nate Pearson is still technically considered
if
one,
he's a prospect.
But yes, you're right. I mean, you've given up your number one.
That's tough.
Two of your top five prospects for a crack at next year, which I think it means you have to re-sign Robbie Ray. I think you have to. I think you have to come back with a 1-2-3 of Barrios, Ryu, Ray, Manoah. That's like your 1-4, I think, going into next season.
And then you hope with Pearson.
And then maybe you hope Pearson comes up. Maybe, you know, you find another reclamation project for the back end of your rotation. You invest heavily in the bullpen. I think they're going to have to find a catcher if they don't feel like one of these kids is truly going to grab the position. And I don't mm-hmm. think that's going to happen right now. I don't think Reese McGuire's your everyday guy on a World Series contending team. Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, I don't see it. So I think the catching position, the third base position, the bullpen, like that's it. But when you look at this will be a six-year plan. If we're looking past this year, which they're not. Now, part of it is marketing. They're home tonight. They want to sell tickets. They want to create buzz. They want to have a party and a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to tell people we're all in. We believe in it.
Hayes, I drove by the dome. There's balloons and everything outside.
It's
a celebration.
Like a party. It's like a birthday party.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a birthday party tonight down at the dome. And you got a good young team. But, again, I'm stressing the plan here where You take Martin, Woods Richardson out of it, but you consider what's here. And what when Shapiro and Atkins got here, after 16, they were going to dismantle it and build it back up. If we're looking past the 21 season, which I don't think they are doing officially, but for argument's sake, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
The 2022 season will be 6 years into that plan. At some point, you have to decide we are good enough. I think they're good enough next year to be a 90-win team.
Sure.
That's what they're telling us here. So do you want to be in a position where come the winter time you can't get that guy because other teams are involved?
Well,
or you can't, you know, next trade deadline you got to pay even more for a guy? Or do you go grab him now and you say he's ours and we know exactly what we've got for next season?
And that's where,
I like that attitude.
Yeah. And that's where we're unfair to front offices. We're like, well, you need to go for it. You need to do something. And then you see what they gave up. And we're like, how could you do that? And so, like, either you get the guy or you don't. So they could have said, like, we're not trading Martin. And Minnesota says, thanks, see ya. We'll trade him somewhere else.
Right.
And then
and someone else would have picked him up. And then guess what? You're still looking for an arm. You're looking for an arm. Go ahead.
How will you feel, like, a few years from now, 2022, let's just say they make the playoffs and nothing happens, and then Martin becomes a stud?
Well, obviously that will be a problem, Jonas. But what are you thinking down the road? If you can go back to 15, when mm-hmm. they traded those pieces for Price, they traded those pieces for Donaldson, they traded those pieces for Tulowitzki.
Yep.
None of them turned into anything.
Hoffman,
would you give back the 15 and 16 years to keep those guys?
No.
Of course not. Right. So, yes, it's always open for interpretation 3 years from now. Clearly, we will not have this answer for another 2 or 3 years. But this is a team that has been buying their time, has been waiting it out, blew it up. Like, they've been awful here for a while. Not this year. And last year, they were a 500 club. But a few years ago, they were a bad team. In 17, they were an awful team. Like, so we're talking 17, 18, 19, they really struggled. And it was all about getting to this point where you're on the edge.
Yep.
And are you going to go over it or not? And I think what comes out of this as well is that Shapiro and Atkins were comfortable with the plan in terms of letting guys go, Bautista, Donaldson, Edwin, Talentulo, you're basically out. Russell Martin, see you later. Like, you guys are going, we're gonna bottom out here. We're going to load up the system. We're going to trade whatever we can, Simmons or Stroman, Sanchez, et cetera, and buy our time. And they always said, when the time is right, we are willing to show that we can be proactive, that we can be bullish, and that we can go all in. This was their opportunity to prove that. And they've done that, right? Because there are some front offices that are just constantly conservative, won't do it. Now, what if that guy turns into a stud? And maybe he will. And listen, if you're in Minnesota today, you're ecstatic. You're not a great team, and you want to load up on prospects. They got two really good ones, really good young arm, and a stud in Martin, who I think will hit at the major leagues. Maybe not for power, and could play second, third, outfield, wherever it's going to be. But listen, they've still got a pretty good farm system. Vladdy's still here, Bichette's still here. You've committed to Springer. I think at some point you have to go all in. Were you hoping for maybe a name that you're more familiar with? Possibly, but don't look past the stats and the performance, right?
Yeah.
He's 27 years old. He's put up consistently good years. He's a really good arm.
Well, maybe you sign him after. That's not
and that is,
crazy
I think,
too.
Something that needs to be considered here, and it's probably an important point of this. You get him up here, he gets used to it. Maybe you sign him before you even start 2022. If you lock him in on a long-term deal, or close to it. And if he's here for 5 years and he pitches really well and you have a contending team, hey, listen, good for you, Austin Martin, if you turn into a perennial all-star. It's still going to pay off well for the Jays.
Yep.
So, listen, it's a gamble. Anytime you pay a big price in the trade market, you're holding your breath. You are. And this is not a team that's on the verge of winning 95 or 100 games right now, like the Dodgers are. The Giants apparently have acquired Chris Bryant. San Francisco's all in. The White Sox are all in. They've picked up Kimbrel. They're running away from that division. They're much more comfortable like that. The Mets picked up Javi Baez today. They're leading their division. The Jays are not. They're fourth in their division. But the division's not going to slow down for you. It's going to be tough the rest of this way, and it's going to be tough next year.
Mm-hmm.
But next year, Vladdy's back, Bichette's back, Springer's back, Hernandez is here, Gurriel's here. You know, you're going to turn over your bullpen. Ryu's coming back. I think they'll keep Ray or they'll find a way. All of a sudden, you got the makings of a team that you can project in the future to be pretty damn good. So, yes, it's a gamble. You're paying a steep price. Maybe it is an overpayment. It very well could be. But if that's the guy you want to prove that you're in, I'll take that attitude over apprehension. Steve Phillips will join us. We'll get his take on this. What are the Jays getting here with José Berríos? What does he bring to the rotation? What about the price and everything else that's going on in baseball? How baseball went as long as they did without a firm deadline is beyond me. This is like this is exactly what you wanted. This is why Bryant's going. Baez is going. All these guys are going because they're not going to be placed on waivers and flipped in August. This is the beauty of a trade deadline. They figured it out. It's awesome. So catch up with Steve. If you can believe it, the Raptors had a draft pick last night.
We have to talk about that.
How much has happened in the sports world, and specifically in Toronto, since the draft last night? They didn't go off the board. They didn't reach, but they didn't take who everyone in the world thought they were going to take. They take Scottie Barnes over Jalen Suggs. We'll get into that later this afternoon. Jonas Siegel's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. José Berríos coming here to the Blue Jays from Minnesota. They've given up Austin Martin, Simeon Woods Richardson in that deal. The Jays have also acquired veteran reliever Joaquin Soria, who has been in Arizona. His stats are, I wouldn't say stellar, you know, but they're banking on veterans coming in here, catching a positive wave, being back in Toronto, being on a better team, and maybe it's patchwork. You know, the bullpen, it's going to be patchwork. That's mm-hmm. what they're trying to do. They're trying to find whatever they can, hope it sticks, and hope it's enough to get them into contention come September. You know, I think that's the next step here is have a quality August. You've got a weak schedule coming up, one of the weakest schedules in the American League. So get after it, pick up some wins, have a chance at meaningful baseball in September. And if you can get in, great. If not, okay, carry it over to next season. And that's what the Jays are thinking at this point. The Blue Jays back home tonight down at the Dome. 15,000 people will be in attendance. This is a night where Scottie Barnes would throw out the first pitch. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Scottie will be up in Toronto anytime soon.
When do we get to talk about that? Soon, right?
Very soon. You're chomping at the bit on that.
I'm chomping. I love it.
You like that play?
Love it.
You like that they went not – It's. I'm having a difficult time
yes.
phrasing this. It's not off the board. It's off the mock draft board.
Yes, we got to right? talk about that.
Because Scottie Barnes was projected to go fifth or sixth on everyone's board anyway. But Jalen Suggs was a lock to go fourth overall, according to every mock draft on earth. And apparently that did not happen.
What do you think, going back to baseball, what do you think is the headline trade? It's got to be like
Scherzer and Turner.
Outside of that one, like maybe today.
It's Bryant.
Bryant. All right.
Yeah, Chris Bryant going to the Giants. Although Javi Baez going to the Mets.
Yeah.
I would say it's equal. Like, and even Kimbrel going to the White Sox. Like, the Cubs have completely dismantled here, and I think they had to, right? Like, they've got a new front office. They're not a very good team anymore. Rizzo goes to the Yankees yesterday. But that Cubs team that won in 16, they have been completely dismantled.
Who's
and
left?
Kimbrel was not there. Man, you'd have to look at that, but I honestly don't know. Like, even Lester got traded, I believe, to the Cardinals. I'm trying to keep track of all
this. Oh, yeah, he's long gone.
So Lester's gone.
Hendrick? Kyle Hendricks?
Hendricks, yeah. Like, you'd have to look up the roster. There might be a couple of guys left from 16, but not a lot. Like, the Cubs just decided, we're done. We're going to load up and reload. They're going to be bad for a long, long time, but maybe in 3 or 4 years it pays off. All right, the Jays have been active, very active today. And to chat about it, we're joined now by our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst, Steve Phillips. Big price here to pick up José Berríos, but Austin Martin, Simeon Woods, Richardson, do you like the deal for the Blue Jays?
I love the deal for the Blue Jays. This is the time and place to do it. You know, you keep hearing a lot of people out there saying, wow, boy, you know, they paid an awful lot. They overpaid. The people who say they overpaid are the teams that didn't get the player. Right? I mean, so if you didn't get the guy, then the reason you're going to say the other team did is because they overpaid, because they gave more than you did. But for the Blue Jays with where they are, this is the perfect fit. 27-year-old athletic right-hander, first-class, top-notch kid. I mean, just amazing kid. Great competitor. really good stuff, front end of the rotation starter, a guy that I think they've got a good chance maybe to lock up for the long term as well. Maybe at the end of the season he pitches well, you get him signed up and buy out some free agent years. But it's just a great pickup. And look, you're giving up. Look, Simeon Wood Richardson could be good. Now, his fastball velocity is down this year, and he's not throwing as well this season as he did last year in the alternate camp. But, you know, he's got a good arm. He's a big kid. Came over in the deal for Stroman. But if you're getting a young pitcher to give up a young pitcher, you know, you're net zero with pitching, and you get the time value of talent. I'm getting the guy pitching today, where even if Simeon Woods Richardson at some point is, you know, a front end of the rotation starter, it's going to be 3 years, 4 years down the road. He's 20 years old. I'll take the talent today in this time and place and take my chances with it and see if we can't sign him. Now, Austin Martin, you know, look, he's got a chance to be a good player. Not hitting for much power early, but it's early in his career. And, you know, that if they dealt from the area of strength. They've got deep position players at the major league level. They've got Jordan Groshans down below. They've got Kevin Smith, who's putting up big numbers at AAA. They've got Aurelvis Martinez coming at A-ball, who may be the best of all of them. I mean, this kid can rake. And so, you know, they've got depth there, and that's what you do. You trade from an area of strength to fill an area of weakness. They did that. Then you add Brad Hand into the mix as well, and you impact the front of the game and the end of the game. Now, whether it'll be enough remains to be seen. You know, the Yankees, great, the Yankees improved their offense, but Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo can't pitch. You know, the Red Sox didn't do anything. Like, Kyle Schwarber makes no sense for their team. He can't play first base. He's never played first base. And he, you know, he can't DH because you got J.D. Martinez. You don't really want him in the outfield because Jaron Duran and Verdugo and Hunter Renfroe are better outfielders. And, oh, by the way, he's got a hamstring pull right now. And they didn't fix their pitching. And so, you know, in Tampa Bay, I don't understand what Tampa Bay did. Like, I get Nelson Cruz. Trading away Diego Castillo, their closer, made no sense to me at all, especially because they just put Pete Fairbanks, the other big arm they have at the end of the game, on the injured list with shoulder inflammation. And so I think they're weaker with their pitching than they were. And so I don't know. You know, I think the door's open a bit for the Jays if they get their act together and the pitching staff solidifies.
So, Steve, could you take us into what a negotiation like that would be like? Like, how does it get to Austin Martin in a conversation like that?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times what will happen is the Twins would say, look, we're going to need, you know, because of the control factor, this is a huge deal that we're going to need front-end prospects. And then, you know, the Jays may say, well, you know, this guy's off limits. We aren't going to put Groshans in the deal. Now, I would have tried to move Peterson before Simeon Wood Richardson, but you know, here's the thing: they've got the other guy. They still have Peterson now on the pitching staff. So you tend to find out who's untouchable in your organization. You know, would you trade Lourdes Gurriel? No, we're not trading any major league pieces. You know, those conversations happen. Then you start to narrow it down a little bit. And say, all right, you know what, we'll put Simeon Woods Richardson in the deal, and then we'll put a lower-level minor league pitcher in, or a minor league position player in. And they're like, no, we need something better than that. You know, we think we can get a better package from somebody else. And then you just keep going back and forth. And then, you have an internal conversations on your own to evaluate your own people. Like, what is Austin Martin going to be? Sure, we thought this is what he was when we drafted him. What do we see so far? What do we see in the alternate camp? Do we think he's going to be a guy that hits for power? What position does he play? And if he's a super utility guy, then, you know, then he's worth trading in this deal because you can find that guy. You can find that guy, and you can find him in free agency. Those guys develop as they go along. And so I think they looked at it and thought, we're giving up a pitcher with upside, who they like, and we're giving up Martin, who maybe isn't as good as we thought when we drafted him. We've got enough depth to make up for him moving forward from an area of strength. So let's go ahead and pull the trigger on it.
So if they can find a way to re-sign Robbie Ray, you bring him back, then you've got your top three in the rotation solidified next year. Manoah, hopefully more growth. There's 1-4. Bullpen and catcher, maybe third base. Is that what's next? Like, between now and opening day 2022, what happens?
Yeah, so I don't, you know, the catching thing I think is going to take care of itself because Gabriel Moreno is going to be the guy. And so you're just looking for a placeholder. And with Reese McGuire swinging the bat like he is, you know, you may have placeholders within there. I don't know that that's a major thing. Third base, they need to figure out, but Biggio's got to get his act together. He's better than what he's played. And so, you know, I think that, you know, again, I don't think the position player area is where I'm looking at all. I keep looking to upgrade pitching. I want another starting pitcher next year that slots in front of Robbie Ray, you know, and because Berríos is going to be affordable. Manoah's affordable. You know, Robbie Ray's not going to necessarily be a $20 million a year pitcher. And so, I want to get back out there and get some more pitching and more predictability in the bullpen than what they have. Don't just go with all young guys. Give me some proven track record there. Even a Ryan Tepera coming back, who's been so good down below in Chicago and now going to the White Sox. But I would just keep going pitching, and the position player situation will figure itself out.
All right, Steve. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay, you bet. My pleasure. We'll talk to you guys.
Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Blue Jay insider, likes the deal. Like it, we'll see on Martin. You know, like, you know, the Jays are going to get it out that all of a sudden they don't love him. You know, or whatever they're going to. They're not going to say that publicly.
But even before Hayes, like, you read some of the stuff. Like, he's like outside the top 50 prospects on Fangraphs. Like, they compare him to like a Ben Zobrist kind of type, maybe. But who knows, right? Like,
who knows at this point?
Ben Zobrist was really good, but like,
Zobrist has been, he's had a great career, and he's always on winning teams. There's nothing wrong with having a guy like Zobrist, but the point I'm making is when he fell into their lap at 5, it was the greatest thing that's ever happened, and now all of a sudden it's like, nah, come on. We don't even know if he'll play or what he's going to be. And the Twins are going to spin it the other way, you know, of course, as they should. It's their guy now. But I fall in line with the way Phillips is thinking here, in terms of being proactive, in terms of going after it, and just pitching. Like, the rest of the way, you find out whatever you can do between now and opening day tomorrow, without punting on this season, but now you've acquired who you can acquire. Maybe Pearson comes up and becomes a bullpen arm. Maybe you can maneuver around the bullpen based on what you have, bringing in, you know, Berríos, and does that mean, you know, Stripling moves to a long relief role? So you got that can give you anything there potentially, but by the beginning of next season, load up on that bullpen, find another arm of the rotation, load up on arms. You're going to have the bats next year. It's all good. Maybe a defensive upgrade here or there that you can use.
Well, and Hayes, like, once you get to the playoffs, you're really talking like you need three guys. You need three or four guys.
Three, maybe four. Yep.
You got Berríos. You got Ryu. And then it's
I think you bring Ray back, but if he's your fourth, then you're really talking.
Right.
You know.
And maybe you hope Manoah, you hope Pearson, and
You're hedging your bets.
Well, and it's
you're
not
throwing
like
a lot at the wall.
You look at the division, it's not like the Yankees have a great rotation. It's not like Boston has a great rotation. Tampa's always going to be able to pitch.
Yeah. But they'll also always turn over before they have to pay anybody.
Right.
And the Orioles are still light years away. So we'll see what Scott Mitchell can tell us about that later in the afternoon. He's going to be down at the park tonight, so get more of a mood on the scene down there. Scotty Barnes.
Whoa, baby.
You like it.
You
like the Raptors going with Scotty Barnes at 4 over Jalen Suggs.
So what's funny is, like, so when I left here yesterday, I started listening to a podcast about, it was a draft preview, and they started talking about Scotty Barnes. And, like, I had read some stuff about him, and the more you heard the potential, like the potential that he had, if he could figure out how to shoot, which is not nothing.
No.
But if he could figure that part of his game out, like, he could be a superstar. And, like, to me, I think it speaks to a problem we have with drafts and mock drafts. Mm-hmm. And because we think a guy is supposed to go in a position, if he doesn't go in a position, it's like, how could he not go in that position? And I think it's something we should evaluate, like, as fans, media, like, just because a mock draft says he's supposed to go fourth doesn't mean he's supposed to go fourth. Like, that's just people canvassing, talking to people around the league. That doesn't mean he's the fourth best player. Like, mock drafts are wrong all the time.
Of course they're wrong all the time.
So just because Jalen Suggs on every mock draft, like, literally, like you said, every mock draft he was supposed to go fourth, that doesn't mean anything. Like, the Raptors may not have him fourth.
Well, if anything, it's lazy, because it was almost as if people didn't even have to think until the fifth pick.
Yes.
Right. It was just put those four because everyone just concedes they're the best four. On top of that, everyone had Evan Mobley going second. And
no, by the end it was pretty clear it was green.
By yesterday, because Woj reported it. A week ago, it was Mobley going too. Like, it was, maybe there were a couple guys, Jonas, but for the most part, it was Cunningham 1, Mobley 2, one of Green or Suggs 3-4. And then it flipped, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, I get that. This is not a reach. Scotty Barnes, on every one of those mock drafts that we've all been reading, was going 5th to Orlando.
Yes.
You know, maybe 6th. Maybe. I didn't see anyone say he was dropping to 7.
Or and the who Warriors cares? Might take
him. Of course who cares. But the point is, it's been the four big guys forever. They got in. They won the lottery. They got in. Great. They get one of those four. And then there's a shock element to it, although it shouldn't be shocking based on the way that Masai and Bobby Webster operate. Mm-hmm. I think at times they can overthink. I think at times they can get a bit arrogant with what they believe their system is in terms of building up prospects and molding different players. But I think they have a philosophy where they'd be happy with five guys on the court that look the exact same, play the exact same.
Yeah.
Nick Nurse said afterwards that Barnes reminds him of two of their own guys, Ananobi and Siakam, which may make you think, well, you already have those guys, so what do you need another one for? Because they can switch off. They can almost guard all five positions. They can shoot. They can pass. They can defend. They're versatile. And I think that's what Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri are trying to get to. They're trying to get to a point where they have one of the most versatile lineups in the NBA. And I also think from the guard position with Suggs, it opens the door for a couple of different things. I don't think it has anything to do with Kyle Lowry. That'd
Agreed.
Be silly. Why would you make a draft pick today based on a guy who's 35,
mm-hmm.
who has options to leave? So the pick last night had nothing to do with Lowry. Maybe they believe in Malachi Flynn. Maybe they're in on Ben Simmons, or maybe they're in on Lonzo Ball. Like, they've been linked to Ball. They've been linked to Simmons, both young guards who could match well also with Fred VanVleet. So it may have been a precursor to what still could be coming this offseason, where they felt like, okay, with VanVleet, Flynn, and Ball, Suggs wouldn't fit anyway. So lean us towards someone else where a guy like Barnes can play a bunch of different positions, bring size, versatility.
Yep.
By all accounts, a great kid. Like, everyone's like, he is going to change your room, culture-changing type of guy. So I'm intrigued by it. I was waiting for Suggs. I hope Suggs doesn't turn into like an all-NBA, because it's a gamble they're taking here. But it's not as big of a gamble as some might make you think.
Well, and the other thing, Hayes, is like upside. I feel like if you're picking in the top five, you should be going for the maximum possible upside.
Absolutely.
And like, you watch Suggs, and it's like, yeah. But like, athletically, it's like it feels like there's a ceiling. Like,
and also not a guy who shoots the lights out either.
Exactly. So
right.
Like, and if Barnes can figure out how to shoot, which, hey, they did it with OG. They've
Maybe
done
they
it with Pascal
Siakam.
They just
bring Simmons in and Lonzo, and everyone learns how to shoot.
Lonzo can shoot now.
Well,
so
I don't know
go.
About that.
He can.
I
think he was like 40%
greatly.
From three last year. But anyway.
Okay.
I love it.
All right.
I'm all
You're
in.
On top of it. Jay Billis will join us later this afternoon, get his take on it. Chad Ford later this afternoon to get his take on it as
heavy
well.
Hitters.
The Olympics continue. Heavy hitters. The heaviest of hitters. Andy Petrillo's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The face of the Olympics. The voice of the Olympics. One of our favorites. Our friend Andy Petrillo coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Scott Mitchell from the Dome ahead of the Jays-Royals game tonight. First home game in a long, long time. And the trades are still coming in. The deadline's passed, but there's still more details on what's happening in Major League Baseball. Some news in the NHL as well. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But Andy Petrillo will join us here in a moment. And Andy will be able to update us on how we're supposed to be feeling as Canadians about the Olympic Games, because it can be very difficult to track everything.
Yes.
Right, Jonas?
Oh, man, I'm way behind.
I'm always behind. We PVR, like, my wife is so into it. And I find it specifically with Penny Oleksiak. Like, Penny was the story of the games in 16, and for me it's completely carried over. Whenever she's in the pool, I'm like, I got to see Penny. And you know, she's doing pretty well. The Canadian women are doing very well across the board. And Andy, of course, is all over it. The star, the face, the voice of the Olympic Games in this country. As far as I'm concerned, here's Andy Petrillo. How you doing, Andy?
Well, the face feels like it's melting, and the voice feels like it's fading halfway through the game. But I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. And I think, you know, the excitement is there, as it always is. Every 2 years, the winter games, the summer games, whatever it happens to be, Canadians jump on board, and I get the impression like that's happening throughout the country. But I find once we get, you know, about a week into the games, we have to take a step back and we ask someone like yourself, how should we be feeling? Because you know this better than anyone else. How should we be feeling about the Canadian performances so far?
Fantastic. I know it's always so easy, and I get it because this is what sport is all about, and even at the Olympic levels, you always want to look at the medal count and you want to compare it to other countries. And sure, I get that, right? But if you look at Canada and just compare it to its own performances throughout the year, we've already seen history being made at these games. Like as far as the amount of medals even accumulated within the first 4 days of competition, they surpassed that from, you know, the record, I think, was like seven, you know, from 1984. And they were already able to pick up more medals than that in the first 4 days here at these games, setting all kinds of national records. Penny Oleksiak, I heard you mentioning her, becoming the, you know, most decorated summer Olympian for Canada, tied with Cindy Clawson and Clara Hughes for the most decorated Canadian Olympians overall. You know, the women's eight in rowing getting gold for the first time since 1992. You know, it's, you know, already three gold medals. So it's pretty special, you know, what Canada is already doing at these games. So, you know, we all know the other story, right? I mean, 60% of the team is made up of women, and they're not disappointing as they now all contributed to, you know, 11 of the medals that Canada has. So as far as comparing Canada to itself, it has been, and it's so far, it's been a great game for them.
Yeah, I think we look at what happened this morning as well with the women's soccer team. They win in penalties, which was just an incredible match. And now they're through to the semis, so they're going to play for a medal at a minimum. So that positive wave continues. But in the pool, you know, Penny Oleksiak, as I was saying just prior to having you on, Andy, like it can be difficult to become a household name in the Olympic Games. Like it can be difficult for it to carry over to the point where you're a superstar. And she's still so young. You know, I forget about that. But she comes – every time she comes out of the pool, she's sitting there waiting for an interview. I think she's handling the pressure very well. I'm sure she'd like to medal even more than she already has. But I love the attitude, and I look at the team that she's a part of. Summer McIntosh, 14 years old. Like, yeah. It's just incredible stories, specifically out of the pool for me. And how do you think Penny Oleksiak is handling being the superstar where 5 years ago no one really knew who she was, and out of nowhere, boom, she is the face of the games.
Yeah, she blows me out of the water. No pun intended, but, like, you know, I even had a chance to speak to her today. And she still has this very sweet, sing-songy tone to her voice when she answers your questions. But don't be fooled by her whatsoever. I mean, we all obviously know she's a fierce competitor. You know, you don't get those medals. You don't perform the way she does on the world stage by not being a fierce competitor. But she has just grown so much. I mean, yeah, she's still young, to your point. She's only 21. But by no means is she that 16-year-old. There's this air of confidence. There's this air of understanding. Like today, you know, because she tweeted about it, and I asked her, right, like in the 100-meter free where she, you know, won the gold medal in Rio, she ended up finishing fourth. But she set a national record, and then she put out that tweet where she's like, you know, stop tweeting me and saying you're sorry that I finished fourth. Like, I set a national record. I'm swimming faster than I have before. And by the way, I'm the fourth fastest in the world. And that quote caught me. Because 2018, the Pyeongchang Olympics, I was working with Alex Depatie, Olympic diver for Canada. He's been retired for a couple of years, but he did exceptional things on the world stage. He's an Olympic silver medalist, but one time he finished fourth. And I remember having this conversation with him and saying, you know, the media, obviously the fans, we always have this narrative around fourth place, right? Like, oh, man, does it ever sting? You just missed the podium, just off the podium. Oh, that medal just eluded you. And I said, you know, that's kind of how we describe a fourth place finish. And how do you describe it? And he's like, well, yes, in the beginning, when you are kind of, you know, young and you don't really know how to put things into perspective, he goes, that can be soul crushing. And while the goal is to always win a medal, not just a medal, the goal is always to win. And then, yes, of course, it is to get a medal. He goes, the older you get, the maturity starts to set in and you start to have perspective and you start to realize out of the billions of people on this planet that you are the fourth best in the world. So when she said that, that reminded me of what he had told me a few years ago. And I went, that right there shows the maturity, the fact that at 21 years old, she has that type of perspective and it's needed. And I get it because it's so easy for people to turn around and say, well, why even bother being an athlete if you know you're happy not winning. That's not what we're saying. They always want to win. They always want to get a medal. But if they don't keep things in perspective, then guess what, guys? We're probably going to be having conversations about mental health way more than we already are, right? Because that's how they look at things, to A, keep themselves sane, but B, to truly understand what their performance means in the grand scale of the world. And the fact that she's talking like that at 21, I mean, it just shows her progression and evolution as a human being, also more than anything as an athlete.
Andy, as someone who is like knee deep in like Michael Bunting fever and Peter Mrazek, I'm ready to jump into the Olympics. What should I pay attention to now?
Okay.
I know women's basketball is this weekend. I'm going to watch that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, did you watch the 3x3, by the way? I don't know if you managed to watch that at all, because that made its Olympic debut. To me, it's still so bizarre because it's like it's older dudes. Right? And like, and even, I mean, the women though are still WNBA women, but I find like the guys are kind of older.
Yeah.
It would be like you guys hitting the court. And I'm like,
right.
That's so weird. But anyways, that was interesting. I don't know if you guys caught any of that.
Oh, I saw it. I was like taken aback by it. I'm like, what is going on here? This is like street ball. It's like the YMCA all of a sudden is in Tokyo and you can walk away with a medal somehow. So I like it though. I found it pretty entertaining.
It is. It is very entertaining, I have to say. So that was actually kind of cool to watch. You know, I'm not going to lie. But if so the first week, it's swimming, right? They take center stage. And there's a reason why they separate. Like when swimming is coming to an end, that's when the men and women of athletics show up, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're going to find out who the – like tomorrow is the 100-meter final, by the way, for the women. Right. So we're going to crown the fastest woman in the world tomorrow. Like this is exhilarating. And then Andre DeGrasse is going to take to the track in his heat. And he's obviously going to try to qualify for the 100-meter final. So I feel like that's pretty obvious, you know, for me to say that. But track and field, baby. I mean, that's what's going to be the piece de resistance to kind of finish off the Olympics here. So I would definitely say turn your attention to that. But something else, like this is one thing about. So there's two things about the Olympics. Like if I were to give you just random random things for me that I always learn at the Olympics, the Parade of Nations opening ceremony always blow me away. Cause I'm like, that's a country. It's a complete geography lesson, which is what I love about the opening ceremony. But the other thing is you always end up getting glued to a sport that you just never thought you'd ever get glued to. And today we brought the men's singles table tennis gold medal match. I'm like, this is insane. I couldn't take my eyes away from it. It's like once in a while when you tune into darts on TV, I'm like, but I'm watching this and there's a gold medal on the line. So that's just like, it's the most random things. There's always that one sport that will just randomly be like, I can't stop watching it. And then judo, Canada picked up 2 bronze in judo, first time women have a medal. I couldn't stop watching it. I have no idea how the scoring system works. I mean, I'll fully admit that. I don't know really how. I know what an econ is, and I know certain Wazari takedowns and all that kind of stuff, but it's still a judged sport. But anyways, I was barbaric. I'm like, finish her! Right? And I just start yelling at the TV.
Sweep the leg!
What happened to me? Just like, what happened? So it's these sports I don't typically watch that I can't take my eyes off of. Love it.
Yep. No, you're not alone. I think the whole country is swept up in the euphoria of the Olympic Games. It happens every couple of years, and we're right in the middle of it, and it's going to continue to be a great ride, and hopefully Canada continues to perform the way that they have been, as you just said, Andy. So best of luck. I know you've been busy. Thank you for squeezing us in, and we'll do it again down the road.
Yeah, bedtime now, boys. 5:30. Yep.
Go shut it down. Shut it down, Andy. We'll see you in the morning.
See ya.
There's Andy Petrillo, who's doing obviously amazing work with the Olympics on CBC and one of our own here at TSN. Speaking of which, Michael Landsberg made an announcement earlier this morning. We will touch on that later in the afternoon. Michael is just a giant in this industry, a giant within the company, and a giant on this station, played a big role in a lot of people's careers, and has always been incredibly gracious to me. So we will touch on Michael and his announcement earlier this morning as well. Hour 2 coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.